What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. All right, guys, let's talk about something we all need. High quality, comfortable, stylish clothing that actually holds up in real life. Whether you're grinding at work, hitting the gym, or just hanging out, the Normal brand has you covered. I've been rocking their gear, and let me tell you, it's not your average clothing line. They've nailed it perfect with the perfect blend of durability, comfort, style. Whether it's a go-to rugged Henley, a hoodie, a button-down that doesn't make you feel like a stiff, the Normal brand is where it's at. The best part is you can support the show while upgrading your wardrobe. Just hit the link in the description below. Check out their collection. Trust me, once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't do it sooner. The Normal brand. Made for real life, built to last. Now go check them out.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift, to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. I really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show. We have a very special guest in studio today. He flew in from Dallas to be here and do a couple podcasts with an Adventure Unknown today. So we're really thankful to have him here. The great and powerful Thomas Keenan. Welcome.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah,
absolutely, man. We're really excited to have you and just kind of get to know you. So for those of you out there that, or for the people out there that don't know you, if you just give us like a little bit of brief overview and we'll dive into some stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
Deep breath with this one. Dude, 45 years old, live in Dallas, Texas. Been there for 5 years. Spent the first 40 years in New York. Born and raised Long Islander. Spent 21, 22 years in the service-based industry in cars. Okay. I was an automotive guy. Started as a car stereo installer. And then transitioned into fabrication, building all the cool fancy crap you used to see on Pimp My Ride.
Sweet.
I was that guy, you know, the 212s bumping down the road and then some rattling everything off the car.
Yeah, you could put the fish tanks in the back.
So the gentleman who started that, his name is David Fishman Rivera.
Okay.
And he's out of California, okay. Puerto Rican dude. And I actually studied under him for a while.
Did you?
Yeah, he's still in the game and he's a gangster.
That's awesome.
And he's old as shit at this point. Well, yeah. For an installer, he's old.
Yeah.
But he's one of the legends in the industry. Just a very, very talented guy who could literally dream wild shit in his head and then just make it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, really cool to see.
Cool. So how long did you do that for?
I stopped. I got out of the automotive industry in 2020 when I moved from New York to Dallas. Okay. So in 2009, I started my second company, which was Top Class Installations. And I had a business partner. And we got involved in GPS tracking and dash cameras and fleet vehicles. So transitioned out of the retail car stereo remote start world and got involved into the bigger business, the fleet side of the house. And we were subcontractors for some really big companies, AT&T, Verizon, Teletrac Navman, a company called Nextrack, which is owned by Continental Tire. Like these are big corporations that sell not just the hardware, like the box that we put in the vehicle, but the software solution behind it. So you can make better business decisions in your business based upon your fleet vehicles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like really cool nerdy shit in there, too.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, so that right there was a big learning curve going from the small mom-and-pop mentality of, hey, some dude just walked in and he wants an amp and a sub in his car, or he wants a gift certificate for his wife's remote start.
Yeah.
Right, doing business like that is way different than the corporate guy coming down and saying, hey, we just sold a job to, I don't know, United Rental. We've got 800 vehicles over 10 states. We need a quote by tomorrow. Ugh. How do you put that together?
Yeah.
How do you put that together? And right. And then, you know, you figure it out. That's what you do. And if you don't figure it out, they just go to the next guy who has his shit together. Mm-hmm. And he gets the job, not you. Wow. So lots of learning came into that and, you know, really had to dial in the business acumen in order to get good and stay good in that field.
Well, what was your journey started in the trenches? What was that pivotal moment for you that made, you know, that mind shift from a technician to an entrepreneur?
35 years old. My now ex-wife came to me and said, I'm pregnant.
Okay.
Yeah. First kid. First kid was like, dude,
it's amazing what those kids will do.
I know. Yeah. Lit the fire under my rear end. And all of a sudden it was like, and about, I don't know, 3 days, 4 days after I found out, because, you know, you get the news, it hits you, you absorb it, you think you absorb it. And then out of left field, it's like, oh.
Whoa, I'm having a kid.
I'm having a kid. And that was the epiphany for me. But it went deeper. It was like, not only do I have a kid coming into the world, but this is living, breathing, flesh, blood, bone. Oh, and I help co-create this thing. Right. So now my responsibility level's here. I'm married for, I don't know, probably 5 years at this point. Own a house, two nice new cars in the driveway, got a nice purebred dog at home, the white picket fence, like the American dream is there. And now all of a sudden, oh, we got to get real serious. Like business is okay. And like, we're doing things and there's money in the bank and I got money coming in. Like money wasn't a problem, but now all of a sudden you got this extra weight of being a parent for the first time. And for me, in my own personal unique situation, I'm really grateful and glad that I waited until I was that age. I mean, I wasn't ready earlier, you know, full transparency. And then, 35 was it, man. It lit the fire. And I looked at the business and I said, you know what? This sucker's got some potential. And I had that hard conversation with myself. And you guys may have or may not have had this with yourself too, where it's like, yeah, this thing can be here. It's here now. I don't know how to get it from A to B. So what do? You just back off and whatever happens, happens. Like, I don't work that way. And this is where I almost want to say, you know, the dog puts his tail between his legs, but you have to go in and ask for help, which can be really hard for guys. Still is for me to this day. Go in and ask for help and look for someone who's done what you're looking to do, whatever you're looking to accomplish. And that led me down. This is 2014, 2015 at the time. Even back then, Google isn't what it is today.
No.
Like, you know, your searching abilities, you know, so I hit the Googles for like three days looking for stuff and wound up pulling up a whole bunch of like local business coaches and had a couple interviews and meetings with some of them. And I was just like, wasn't that impressed. And then one guy basically tipped the domino and signed on with him, spent some money with this dude, go into his office. And it was a conference table similar to this, a little bit longer. And he was this big old fat dude. His name's Richard. He was sitting over there. And I walk in, he comes in, he drops his book on the table and he goes, if you're going to work with me, you're going to read. And I was like, oh shit. Now, 35 years old. I haven't picked up a book since high school. Okay. I didn't go to college because I was working. I decided to go down the trade route. Not that I wasn't educated. Not that I wasn't reading. I wasn't reading anything on business development, self-development, any of that kind of crap. I was reading anything that had to do with the technical role of my job. Mm. Okay. So now I pick up this book and I rip through this thing in like a day.
What book?
Built to Sell, John Warlow.
Okay. Heard of it.
Yeah. And it's a story. It's not a real story, but it's a story that basically just lays out, this is where our business was and this is the potential it had. And this is what it looked like once this guy did work.
Yeah. See, those are the type of self-help books are like that I like to read. I mean, we like the 5 AM club, similar to that. Mm-hmm. There's a few other ones, but yeah, I mean, those are more because there's a story behind it, like where some of them aren't, but those are some of the ones that we like to, because we have a book club that we like to read. So
yeah, him and I read a book together once a month and then do kind of a podcast recapping, doing a little book report basically on the book, you know, what we liked, what we didn't like. And yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. Dude, that was the first one. And, I gave him some bullshit excuse that day too. I was like, man, you know, you want me to read and I own the service-based business and me and my business partner and maybe the two employees we had at the time, like we're on the road nonstop. Like we go to the customer's location and perform the installs. And like, sometimes they're hours away, states away, days away. When the hell am I going to pick up a book and read? And he nipped that one in the bud real fast. He's like, you have a radio in your car? Like, yeah.
Audiobooks.
Get the damn audiobook. He's like, I'm not buying the audiobook for you. That's on you. But he still handed me the copy of the book. I still have it to this day. It sits in the bookshelf at home. And it's one that will never leave.
Yeah.
Right. Cause that was the first one that basically, like I said, tripped the domino over and just caused this massive cascade. know, I've what I found out was this, and you guys are probably similar. I love learning. Yes. I didn't realize that I was missing a big piece of it. And when I got reintroduced to it again, it was like, boom, just lit this sucker off. And just vivaciously ripping through books for several years.
Yeah, I think we're with how we're kind of brought up in school. I always looked at reading as
a chore
because you're reading stuff that you're not really interested in. You know, like I love learning, like you said, but I like learning about stuff that I'm interested in or things that are going to benefit me. Like, you know, I like learning about something that I'm trying to think in school, like if chemistry, for instance, like that was something that I didn't care at all about, like that reading about that just right over my head. It's going in one ear and out the other. But you know, you put some sort of personal development or something, some history or something that I'm going to actually get something out of. Like I'll read that all day because I'm actually interested mm-hmm. in it. But I think with our schools and everything, like everything's so, you know, here's the curriculum. You got to read what you're supposed to read. Yeah. And you know, I think that's why kids like don't love reading because they're reading stuff that they're not interested in.
Forced to read.
Yeah. They're being forced. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got a really good perspective on schooling now at my current state in life. And we were talking about it before. And like, I've got 7 kids at home. Okay. Now 3 of them are biologically mine, 4 are my girls. And together we've got 7 kids. Her 4 girls have been homeschooled since day one. My 3 have not. And seeing the differences in them, the way that they interact, the way that they show up, their willingness to have conversations versus not having conversations. And I can tell you that there's a vast difference, in my opinion, an improvement in the girls that are homeschooled versus my 3 kids who went into traditional school.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. And it's like...
Can you elaborate on what, like...
I mean, if you talk history, right?
Sure.
Go back to, I believe it was Rockefeller, who basically built the school system.
Yes.
Right? They call it the school-to-prison pipeline. For a reason. You ever go into a school like recently?
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Right.
It's been a while.
Looks a lot like a government facility.
Yeah. We just walked through we just toured a preschool for, you know, we're going to be sending my oldest to preschool soon. And it's been a while since I've been there, but yeah, you kind of walk through it and it does feel kind of prisony.
Yeah.
A little, you know, like the cinder block walls mm-hmm. and the, you know, and the, just everything's just kind of sterile and
I guess now that you mentioned, cause I mean, I guess I haven't, it's been a while since I went into Connor's elementary school. But yeah, I guess now that you mention it, it is kind of,
it's just plain.
Yeah.
They're all the same color and
yeah, they're all like that pale, like tan and like pale
gray
yeah, or whatever. Like
a dull blue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no, thank you. Yeah. You know, and just looking at it now and seeing what it is, like if I had to do it over again, I probably would have just kept my kids out and it's work to homeschool the kids. Like, and that falls on you as the parent, like, cause I do believe that they need to be educated. Right. But I don't think that they have to go down the normal route of, well, this is what society says.
Mm. Well, and now you're seeing a lot too with kind of the government agenda that's pushed through schooling. Yeah. And it's, you know, is that something that you want? I mean, the one thing here is Missouri has a ton of private, or St. Louis has a ton of private schools. Like, especially, you know, they'll have, what is it? St. Mary's and all the, you went to St. Mary's.
Marianist, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of it are these private schools that are tied to a church, which isn't a bad thing. But you got all boys schools, all girls schools. There's, you know, and I feel like the education level through there might be a little bit better, or it's not going to be as biased as you mm-hmm. sending someone to a public school. Yeah. But I'm a product of public school. But
yeah, I am too.
This was back in early 2000s mm-hmm. before everything, you know, got political. And so, you know, yeah. I don't really remember any biases or anything like that put on me. So,
yeah, I'll give you, for instance. So, it's dumb cold in Dallas right now, just like it is here, which is a whole other topic for the day. So my kids stayed home from school on Wednesday. Like, it was so cold. They shut down the school. It was sunny outside, but it was like 9 degrees. Okay. They shut school down and they're going to have a makeup day in, I don't know, probably
May,
a month or so, like right towards the end of school. They'll have a makeup day. And like, what's the reason of the makeup day?
Money. Yeah.
Right. They need to say, hey, state, we've done XYZ days of education. Therefore, you need to send us the funding. Mm. It all comes down to money.
Right.
Like, I don't necessarily agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, like, is my kid going to be dumber than, because they missed a day of school versus not?
Mm. Well, that, and then how old are they?
So my 3 that go to school, one's going to be 11. And then I have twins who are 8.
Okay. And then how about your girlfriend's, her kids? How old are they?
14, 11, okay. And 7.
Gotcha.
Two sets of twins. She's got twins. Whoa, like twins.
Wow. Holy cow. Yeah.
There's kids
that's
everywhere, bro.
Crazy.
Well, and it, I mean, I'm sure, I mean, and that's the thing with them being homeschooled, they were probably still learning and doing activities, and were your kids taking part in that, or were they doing their own thing?
Yeah. So it was kind of like a free for all that day. Gotcha. Not gonna lie. But here's the deal. Here's what I've learned too, right? And you guys are both parents. You may have seen this as well. Oftentimes as adults, we're like, oh, we got to spend the entire day with our kids for them to get the most out of us today. Actuality, they need a good solid 15 minutes, maybe an hour. Mm-hmm. Right. And they're like, cool, dad, I'm done. Like, I'm gonna go do my thing now. I think the same thing applies with school. And this is how I equate it, right? My kids leave the house. Okay, wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. By 7:15, I drop them off at school. By 3:30, they're home. Okay, it's a long day.
Yeah.
Okay. The kids who are homeschooled get the same amount of work done in a 3-hour window. They don't have the stress of getting up and getting out of the house and dealing with all the bullshit. They don't have the stress to deal with any of other just kids being assholes.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, you guys see me here. We're very similar in size. Mm-hmm. I'm 6'4", 285. I've been a big, giant human my whole life, mm-hmm. right? And I was the kid who grew up with other kids just not being cool to me because I was always bigger and weird looking, right? Like, our 4 girls who are homeschooled, they don't deal with that shit. I guarantee you at some point in time that my 3 biological kids have dealt with some of that crap at school.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I dealt with some bullying growing up. I think that's ultimately what kind of led me down the path of like wanting to, you know, get into fitness and working out and football and wrestling and now jujitsu and all the things. Like, I think that's kind of where that all stems from for me is like, you know, I remember being bullied a little bit growing up and like kind of always being the chubby, smaller kid and like, okay, well, I can't grow tall. I can grow wide. So like, let me, you know, start working out and learn how to fight and do all these things. But I think that's kind of ultimately, but that stemmed from kind of social situations in school.
Yeah.
You know, looking back on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Elementary school was tough. Cause I was the husky kid. I played sports. I played hockey, football, baseball, soccer, indoor soccer. And I think once middle school hit a growth spurt, started to lean out, things kind of changed a little bit, especially around being in sports. I just like, hey, I'm going to stick, like, I'm not going to worry about the people at school that I don't play sports. I'm just going to stick to my friend group through the sports that I had because we all have those common themes and everything else was fine after that. But yeah, I mean, I hear about it today. It's just insane the shit that's going on, but I think social media has a big part of that.
Technology, just social media, but the phone itself has opened up a great world for a lot of really good positive reasons. But at the same point in time, the negative crap comes along with it too.
Yeah.
Well, it's because the bullying doesn't stop at 3 o'clock. Then it can go all night.
Yep.
You know, you could be one post that goes off and people are making fun of whoever and, you know,
for days.
Yeah. And it could last and, you know, it obviously it's having an effect on our youth. That's for sure.
That's a really good way to think of it. You know, back in our day, if you were getting bullied at school, by the time you got home, you had some reprieve.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. Not saying that the home life was perfect, cause that's a whole other topic.
Right.
Right. And hopefully it was. But I couldn't imagine being a kid today and just 24/7 getting that, you know? Yeah.
I mean, Zach just went through some cyberbullying himself not too long ago.
We did this like stupid dance
over
like,
his dance moves.
Over my dance moves. Uh-huh. Yeah, I never said I was good. Never said I was a good dancer. That's for sure. But yeah, I kind of want to get back to how you kind of got to where you are today.
Sure.
So you know, you met the coach.
I met the coach. And it was like, oh, cool. This is a world of possibilities. So number one thing this guy says to me, he goes, "This is the first coach." He goes, if you got to email one of your clients, how do you do it? Like, where do you go to look up their information? I was like, well, I go into my Outlook account and I search their name. And then I search and search and search. And sometimes I can't find it. And sometimes I can. And then I have their contact info when I email them. And he's like, oh, God. He's like, you need a CRM in your business. I'm like, what the hell's that? Oh, I had no idea what it was. Like, that's how green I was as a business owner. I was a great technician, but I didn't know a damn thing about like really owning and operating the business.
Yeah.
So, got involved and started learning what that was, then started to learn about systems, learn about processes and learn about how to, you know, whiteboard them out and then go implement them into a company. And it was a really natural fit for me. Because of my years spent as a car audio installer, believe it or not, like this is how I equate it to people, right? In the custom car audio world, especially in today's day and age with these new cars where you're really not changing a radio because the damn radio is this big and, mm-hmm. You're not putting a dash kit in that car.
Right.
Right. This isn't a 99 Accord. And you're not putting your flip out.
Yeah, I had one. It's my 2000 Sonata.
My Sony.
So
that you took out with you and hid so nobody would steal it.
Yep. Yeah. You know, detachable face. Yeah. We integrate aftermarket electronic systems into factory electrical systems. Integrate. It's a key word there. Right. So we're not replacing, removing, we're integrating with the existing platform to make it better. Okay. There is a thought process that goes into doing it and doing it properly. And what I found was the same thought process used there easily transfers over to the business world. Right. So like, okay, cool. We come into a company and you guys have some systems and processes in place, whether you realize it or not. How do we go and integrate a new system, process, software, platform, whatever, into this company to make it more efficient, make it better? And it was just a natural transition for my brain to pick up on. And of course there was bumps along the road and hit some obstacles and learn different ways.
Well, that's a good coach. That a good coach is somebody that's gonna be able to simplify it to make it make sense for you. But that's awesome that they were able to translate it in a way that made sense for you.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, there was three coaches along the way that I learned a lot from. Of course it's evolved from there, and I'm now at a point in my career, my journey, and you guys probably are too, where it's like, you know, I don't need the general coach at this point. Like I know 99.9% what I need to do. When I do go out and hire a coach, it's for a very specific reason, right? So it's like, hey, I need to hire, like, for instance, jiu-jitsu, right? That's a coach if you're going in and getting trained by somebody else, right? Oh, yeah.
I'm a coach at my gym.
Yeah. So you're looking for someone whose skill set exceeds yours, or someone who has achieved something that you want to achieve on a personal level. The same thought process goes into hiring a coach for a business, right? So like right now, my YouTube game sucks. Well, I need to go find a YouTube expert, right? And whether you want to call them a consultant, you want to call it an agency, it's a damn coach.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The person knows what they're doing and they're going to teach you how to do it better than what you're currently doing. And is the relationship with that person going to be long-term? I don't know, maybe. But it may be a season too. It may be a 3-month relationship where that person helps you put things in place and then you take it from there. Yeah. So just a different way to look at it. For sure. Yeah.
Okay. So, so then you obviously you hire the coach, then you start kind of diving into the systems and, you know, obviously you're implementing that in your own business.
Yep.
Do you transfer or at some point, do you still do the
automotive stuff?
Automotive stuff. Okay.
No. So, that was all going down. Things are going great. Wound up bulking up the team. But by the time, I think when I left, we had close to 27 or 30 employees full-time for my company. And just did well. And like I got to the point, and we were discussing this earlier, like I had to back out of doing the day-to-day work. I had to hang up my tools in order to really run and operate the company. And doing so. And what I found was, this is great. We made really good money here. I learned a ton, which is the key piece. Like you can't pay me enough for what I learned in 11 years of operating that business. That makes sense to you guys. Mm-hmm. And took that information and said, you know what? I started helping other people at that point in time too. I set up a very specific Facebook group, still active to this day, called the GPS Tracking Installers. And it was specific for that industry because I found a gap there. It's like, hey man, there's a lot of people who do what we do in this industry, but there's no community for us. There's no resource. There's no place to go to and say, hey man, like I need help. Like if have you guys ever heard of a GPS tracking installer?
No.
Right. Bingo. I hope my point. Okay. It's a niche within a niche within a niche. Automotive. It's automotive electrical. It's automotive 12 volt. It's automotive telematics. So it's like layered down. So put this group together and wound up finding a bunch of people. And what I would do is I like sharing knowledge. If I found something that works for me, that has helped me exceed, do well, make money, help others, just show up as a good human being, I'll gladly go share that with somebody else. And I go live in this Facebook group and literally open up my company playbook and say, hey guys, we just did this. And 3 months later, this was the outcome. And I would give them step-by-step instructions, go follow this and go do it for yourselves. And some people thought I was crazy. And my mindset was, and this is much more of an abundance thinking mindset. It's like, all right, cool. Look, if 100 people came in and watched that video, 10 people took action. Out of the 10 people who took action, one dude completed it. And if that one dude completed it, I'm still 3 months in front of him. Like, what do I have to lose?
Right.
So he might be in a completely different area or region.
Yeah. Like that dude's in California and I'm in New York. Like, right. I got nothing to worry about.
Like
right.
It's not affecting you.
Yeah. Bingo. So I started doing that. And, the DM started blowing up on a regular basis. Guys hitting me up. Hey, I'm so-and-so. I'm in your group. I'm out of Florida. I'm out of Mississippi. I'm out of wherever. I'm in this situation. Can you help? You got a couple minutes to hop on the phone with me? And I was just doing this, and it was very fulfilling to me. And I was down in Dallas at a meeting with a buddy of mine, successful guy, owns a whole bunch of businesses, and he does a lot of consulting. And I bailed out of this meeting a couple times and took a couple calls, which I don't like doing. And it was some pretty hot situations that like these guys in my group were hitting me up with, like, hey, man, I'm at a spot. I need some help. I'm like, all right, well, I'll help you out. So he overhears me in one of these conversations. He's like, what are you doing? I'm helping guy. He's like, no, dummy. What are you doing? Kind of like dad coming and smacking you in the back of the head. And like, you know, you're sort of kind of in trouble, but not really. You're about to learn a lesson. So Jeff, my buddy, he says, you know, you're a smart dude and you're giving away all of your information and you should be turning this into a profit. Like this should be monetized for you. I was like, oh, I never thought of it that way. He goes, yeah, this is how you do it. Right. Back of a napkin, just kind of laid it out for me. I was like, oh, wow. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
In that point, you know, moving forward, I started coaching. Okay. Right. And at first it wasn't necessarily me selling people directly. I was a member of an organization in Dallas, and they asked me to come in and start coaching on their behalf too. I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. I was thinking about doing this. And the way that they presented it to me was like, hey, we're going to do the marketing. We're going to do the sales, and we're going to hand this person over to you. And all you got to do is the fulfillment. Pretty easy.
Yeah.
Cool. So I did that for a whole bunch of years. I fell in love with it. Cause to me, that became something that was ultimately fulfilling. And this was going on for about a year and a half before I moved out of New York. So I had my feet in the water already, getting wet and understanding what was required and involved in that industry, that space. And part of my plan was to make that full time. So I had the conversation with my now ex-business partner. Hey, love you like a brother, but this is not a good fit for me anymore. Tired. I don't want to do this anymore. The business had become very transactional, right? It was just, it was a numbers game. Right. And we were doing work for people that didn't even want to do work with us. Right. The federal government got involved and said, if you have an over the road truck, you have to have this thing called ELD, electronic logbooks. Like you're forced to put this device in your truck. So now like big companies, they wanted it because they ran their businesses off of data. Mm. Right. When you got Jose and his son, Juan, who own, you know, two trucks and they're on the road nonstop. And now Uncle Sam comes in and says, hey, you guys put this crap in your trucks. Otherwise we're going to hit you with a $14,000 infraction per. Wow. That dude doesn't want this.
Right. Yeah. No.
Right. This is just the government coming in and being the government. So at that point, the transaction of it just left a bad taste in my mouth. I didn't want to be on the road anymore.
Man, you would have killed it here in St. Louis. There's so many owner operators out of St. Louis.
Yeah. It's a big market.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I've worked with a lot of them on the mortgage side.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, that was it, man. I was just kind of done with it. And I had started speaking at that point in time too. And I still speak a lot. I probably 7-8 times a year at this point. I've slowed it down a bit intentionally.
How did you get into that?
Great question. So 2019, June of 2019, my book launched. Okay. I decided to write a book, and the book that I was, it's called Unfuck Your Business. I talked about a lot of the experiences I had growing my company. And some of the hurdles, some of the obstacles, and some of the things we did to fix it. Right? Same stuff I was telling and teaching people inside this Facebook group. I just documented it and turned it into a book. Cool. So this thing takes off. About 3 weeks after the book launches, I get a phone call on a Saturday, and it's coming from a Massachusetts number. So I'm like, man, this is a Saturday. It's a Massachusetts number.
Spam. Yeah.
No, it's not. Like, I got technicians up in Massachusetts working right now. Like, oh, shit, maybe it's someone calling because there's a problem on the job site. And the way that I had the phone system set up in the company, if my phone rang, it was usually a problem. Like it had to go through a whole bunch of people before it came to me. So I pick up the phone and it's just this dude, Chris Cook. I know who he is. And he's like, hey, this is Chris. I'm like, yeah, I know who you are. Chris is the president of the MEA, Mobile Electronics Association. Has been forever. Like this is the dude who holds the keys to the mobile electronics industry. Right? Like pretty much everything comes through him. And he goes, hey, saw that you wrote your book. Congratulations.
I just bought it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
congratulations on the book. I got a question for you. Like, yeah, what's up, Chris? He goes, are you available to come down to Dallas in August? Like, this is now July, like July 4th, around that time. And this is like a month away. He goes, we just had a spot open. Someone can't make their speaking engagement with us, and we need to fill a spot. We'd like you to come down and speak. It's like, yeah, cool. I'm your guy.
How the fuck do I do this?
Yeah. That was the next question, yeah. Right? Like, I got this.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. So,
exactly.
How many people?
Yeah, that was the next question. So, I had been banging on this dude's door for 2 years because I wanted to do it. Like, I felt that I had something to offer, and I still speak for them a lot. And one of the reasons I do so is that was the place, that was the industry that started my career and the successes that I've had over the last, 20 years. So if I can give back to the guys who are still in the place where I was when I started, I'm all game for it. Yeah. I'm not even looking for money. I want to just show up and be a good person. So I tell him, yeah, I'll do it. I tell my now ex-wife, like, yeah, this thing came in. And she's like, yeah, don't forget, we're leaving in a couple of days. We got a family vacation. So we had like a 10-day family vacation between then and this trip to Dallas. And I'm like, oh, shit. Like, all right, well. So I call Chris back and I'm like, yeah, like, what's the requirement? Like, how much time do you need me up there? And I'm praying. This guy says like 20, 30 minutes. He's like, yeah, I need you for an hour and 20 minutes. I'm like, an hour and 20 minutes. Like, I've never spoken in front of a crowd of people. An hour and 20 minutes. I got to get up there and talk.
That's a long time.
That's a lot of talking. Okay.
Oh shit. We've had comedians on here that talk about doing 3, 4, 5 minute sets and how long that feels like. Fuck, hour and 20 minutes.
Yep. So, I then find out they hold multiple events a year. I know the inner workings of it now because I've been doing it for 7 or 8 years at this point. They hold multiple events per year, and they have one event per year that's the big show, and they do a whole awards ceremony in the industry afterwards. Well, lo and behold, this Dallas event is the awards ceremony, so this is the big show.
Straight to the big show.
Right to the big show. So, I don't know, there's probably 250, 300 people in the room that day. I think the overall event had just north of 4,000 attendees. Like, it was a fucking monster. Yeah. It turned out well, did my thing, and it opened up other doors. It's funny, man. You write the book, it opens a door. Then that door opens up all these other doors. And like, lo and behold, if we follow all those doors back, it leads us right here in this room today. If I hadn't done those things previously, like, would you guys even want to talk to me? Probably not. Right. This wouldn't be a thing. So anyway, started speaking there and I haven't stopped, which is really cool. It's, We just did one in Vegas in January. Cool. Next one's coming up in Atlantic City in June. And then the third and final one will be in Dallas in August.
That's awesome.
Dude, that's incredible. Man.
Very cool.
And I get business from it at this point too, which is awesome.
Well, I think the cool thing about it just kind of goes to the mindset that you have, like, hey, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing speaking, but I'm just going to take this opportunity and figure it out. Like,
literally.
Like, that's what successful people will do. And that's awesome. So very, very cool. So one of the things, so having scaled businesses to 7 figures and obviously you mentioned it requires systems, but what's the most overlooked human element in the process? I think I might have an idea of what you're going to say to that.
Most overlooked element. I don't know if it's an element in and of itself, but I think it's values. I think people aren't clear on their values.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Yeah, the mentality aspect of it.
Like, you got to get super clear on your values. I'm also a massive fan of hiring for the values versus the skill. Mm-hmm. Which is really hard, especially when it's a skilled trade, right? And I ran into a lot of problems with that hiring in the tracking industry.
Like, hiring skills or hiring for value?
Both. So it's like, hey, I need to, first of all, where do I find someone who's got the skills for this niche down business? Mm-hmm. Is problem number one. And when you do find someone who's got the skill set, they typically have all this extra baggage and bullshit that comes along with them, right? Because they've been doing it for 20 years and they're the expert.
Yeah. I know how to do it. I have my way.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't tell me how to do it. Like, I've been doing this longer than you've been alive.
Yeah.
Maybe so, but this is my company, sir.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, either way, you kind of have a tough go at it. And what I found was, and this is, people are not going to want to hear this who are in service-based businesses. The two best technicians that I ever had work for me were basically built from the ground up. They started working for me and my partner part-time as 17-year-old kids who were just showing up and helping out. Mm. Took 2 years to get those dudes trained up. And in that, once we hit around that 2-year mark, like, those guys were the best we ever had, most reliable, showed up on time. And literally we would send them out states and weeks at a time and they could do projects for us and never have a problem.
Yeah,
but that was the time investment needed to build them into the person we needed them to be.
Yeah. Ultimately, I mean, with your skill set, you can teach anybody how to do what you do. But you can't teach those non-tangible things, the work ethic, the drive, the passion, the things like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the biggest thing that we run into with, you know, building our teams and bringing people on is finding somebody that has that passion and that will, that willingness to like, hey, you just got told no. Okay. You call them back again.
Yeah.
You keep pushing forward. Like it's tough. It's a tough industry on our end. But I mean, I could teach anybody how to be a good mortgage lender.
Yep.
You know, and same aspect for you. You can teach anybody how to be a good GPS, putting in the integration systems and all that. You can teach them that. So no, I'm with you on that one for sure.
Yeah.
It's just hard to find those people.
It is, you know, step one is getting clear on the values for yourself, what you believe in. Mm-hmm. Right. And then it is, and this is what I see a lot of, this is what I help a lot of people with too, is implementing our hiring process.
Well, that, I mean, I was just looking at your book. That's what your book's about, right? Determining what your core values are.
The main squeeze of the book is core values. And I tell a lot of stories about how we figure that out and learn that.
Yeah. Okay. Learn the hard way.
Yeah.
Definitely. We're going to have to read it for sure.
Hell yeah.
I was looking into some of your stuff and you have this, small steps forward daily.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, man. It's something that, I just live by. Right. And personally, I guess I was, I don't know, what are we now? It's 2025.
Mm-hmm.
8 years ago, I decided to get off my lazy ass and start hitting the gym again. And, like 3 years, I didn't see a damn change. Felt stronger. Like I was definitely stronger, but didn't see a change in the mirror whatsoever. And it's one of those things where if I had quit at that point or many other times prior to that, like, you know, am I in the greatest of shape now? No, absolutely not. But I'm in way better shape than I was. Okay. Like I can hang with some dudes doing some stuff. Right. If I hadn't shown up every single day, whether I wanted to or not, and put that one extra step in. My goal here is every single day is to get a little bit of forward progress. Like I grew up playing football.
Okay.
Right. And the rule was like forward progress. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's, if we get a yard per play, we're making forward progress. That's kind of the mentality that, I came into that with is like, hey, whether you want to or not, get up and make a bit of progress today. And if you make a little bit of progress every single day, you can turn around in 6 months and look behind you and say, oh shit, I didn't realize how far we came.
Right.
And it just feels like this micro step at the time. Right. And I think so many people just give up on that. A lot of people want to go out and hit the grand slam every single time. And like, it's just not the world we live in.
No,
it's not reality.
Reality's base hits with the occasional home run.
Yes.
You know, like that's what I found in my industry.
No, you're not going to step up to a situation where you have the opportunity to have a grand slam if you're not putting in the work.
Yeah. So, I mean, this comes into anything. This comes into the gym. This comes into growing the business, growing the team, handling the family, getting projects done at home. Right. Like all that stuff. Like don't expect to just sit down and like, oh, I'm going to go and rebuild my entire backyard in an hour. Like, no, sir. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. So you mentioned not seeing any physical shifts, but how did you feel mentally through the time getting in the gym and working out?
Better. Yeah. I was hanging around with different group of people at that point in time. Started really taking self-development, personal development seriously for the first time in my life. Me working on the strengths and getting better in business or getting better at the skill set was never a problem. Like I'm the kind of guy, I'm either all the way in or I'm all the way the bug out, right? There's no in between. And if I'm into something, just get out of my way and let me be. And that's kind of what happened in the self-development side of the house too. And it was a transition, man. Like anything else, you know, there's still days I don't want to show up and do any of that crap.
Yeah. But you show up anyway.
Right. And you wind up building that muscle over time and you wind up being able to overcome hard stuff. And here's some hard truth stuff, right, guys? The work I was doing then, I knew it was important. I didn't really know, like, sometimes you go in and you're training, like, what the fuck am I training for? Right? And then life throws a curveball at you, like, oh, that's what I was working for right there. And just the last 5 years of my life, like, I've had a lot of those curveballs thrown at me. Some directly at me, some at loved ones, and some in between. My ex-wife battled breast cancer a couple of years ago. I wound up working down in Dallas for someone for 2 years, having some massive growth within that company. 20 months into it, we said, this isn't a good fit for each other, and went our separate ways. So now like all of a sudden a career change, then went full-time into Step It Up Academy, which is my coaching consulting company. Wound up going through a divorce about a year and a half ago. It's like all of these things kind of just stack and stack and stack. And if I hadn't done the work back 8 years ago, when I started to work on me, from the mental, the physical, the spirituality aspect, like I probably wouldn't be here right now. I would have crumbled under the pressure of life. It's just reality.
Yeah, my journey is slightly different than yours in terms of that. Like it took the divorce. It took that happening for me to wake up.
Ah.
And so, you know, it's a shame that I couldn't figure it out sooner. Who knows what would happen? Obviously, I think we still would have gotten divorced because it was one of those things. But ultimately, that was what shook me to like, hey, you need to fucking wake up. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's because I played professional baseball for years. Got out of baseball, and when I retired from baseball, you know, I always told myself, yeah, I'm going to get back into the gym. I'm going to take some time off. Well, that snowballed into 7 years of not doing anything. I got fat, out of shape. My mentality was gone. Yep. And then all of a sudden, bam, divorce. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're hit in the face with something that's just rocking your world, that you're like, oh yeah, things are going to be fine, but it's not. And yeah, it took a hard look in the mirror, like to admit like, hey, this is where I fucked up. And this is how I need to improve it. And from there, like I'm a completely different person now.
Yep.
And so, yeah, so kind of a little slightly different than you know, you were prepared for it. I wasn't. And I had to adapt and make the change then. And
yeah,
that's the greatest thing that honestly has ever happened to me.
For sure.
And yeah. I, you know, in the relationship I have now with my ex-wife is great. And it wasn't at the time, but like I said, that's what we needed. Mm-hmm. And we needed that shakeup for us to move on and be better parents for our kids and better, you know, ex-spouses and
sure.
Before, but yeah, I mean, it completely changed my business, completely changed my mindset, completely changed how I go about my day-to-day life. Mm. And yeah, it was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah,
for sure.
So, one thing that I did, April's going to be 2 years that I've been sober.
Oh, good for you. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. And like, I never walked around thinking like I had a drinking problem. And, you know, looking back at now, I was like, oh shit, dude, I drank every day for 20 years. Like I didn't go, I was never a sloppy drunk. Mm-hmm. Right. I was a guy who would go out and I'd come home from work and have 1 to 3 beers. Yeah. Right. Weekends I'd have a couple more. Occasionally there'd be too many. Mm-hmm. Right. But I was never one to go out and get sloppy and, you know, get dragged home by the cops. It was never me. But you don't realize how that impacts you. Like you also don't realize what that's doing to your physicality as well, and how it kind of retards the growth on the physical spectrum. So here I was working out and doing all this stuff for years on the physical side of the house. I'm still putting all the damn poison in my body, and I'm not against drinking whatsoever. Right. Like you guys got a cool ass looking shelf over here. It's right. Awesome. I was never a brown looking dude, by the way. Can't do it.
Yeah. See, for me, that's why I drink it, because put it neat. Yeah. You can have one
and be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have that mentality either.
Yeah.
Yeah. I needed at least 3 or 4. Yeah. So, you know, when I was coming up to this cusp of this massive life altering decision, which was like, hey, I'm kind of on the fence. Like, do I stay with the ex? Do I not stay with the ex? Like, what are we doing here? I said, you know what? I'm going to cut this shit. Right. And this is going to be a temporary thing. I'll probably get back to drinking my beer. I love my beer. Right. I'm going to cut this stuff for a little while. And I'm going to, cause here's the thought process I went through. I'm going to make decisions over the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, whatever it may be, that are going to impact not just me, not just my ex, not just the three amazing little human beings we've created together, but also the other ancillary family members who are around us. Okay. It's going to impact a lot of people. I don't want to look back 6 months after making that decision or 6 years after making that decision and say, wow, I made a real bozo move right there, because I was shit faced the whole time. Because as we know, as the stress increases, we typically pour more booze on top of,
sure,
of it as well. I was like, you know what? I want to stay away from that. And I want to make decisions with the clearest head possible. And it's funny, man. Here we are. April's going to be 2 years. Like, I don't even have an urge or desire at this point in my life.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, I listened to one of your podcasts last night, and I think you were talking about plant medicine.
Yep.
Was that an influence?
Huge, stuff? Massive piece of it.
Can we get into that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that was one of the pieces behind the scenes.
Ayahuasca? Or
no. No, mostly psilocybin. Okay. I think that was one of the pieces that, and like, I'm not the doctor here. I'm just going to tell you from my perspective. Sure. I think that rewired a lot of the neural pathways in my brain and basically said, you don't need alcohol anymore.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Now, was this just one experience, or did you have several?
I've had a couple. I had one real formal one, where I actually traveled and spent some money and worked with a professional to administer. It was a full blown 2-day deal out in Utah. Really cool, fantastic experience. I think everyone should do it for the most part.
I mean, I've done psilocybin a handful of times, but it was more of a party thing in college, you know, probably 7-8 times throughout my 4 years in college.
Yeah.
But it was always like not a it was a fun thing. It was never a, like, let me go find myself kind of thing.
Yeah, this is not fun whatsoever.
Right. Yeah. And that's, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a guest on earlier, one of our earlier guests, who talked about him going on an ayahuasca trip, and he's, well, he does it every year, right?
Yeah.
I think he goes every year.
He is one of the shamans I don't know, shaman's the right word. Maybe it is. But, guides. And now he does that. And, but yeah,
he talks about how he completely changed his life and how he was addicted to opiates and pain pills and things like that, and how it completely reshaped his life and brain and everything. It was, and I mean, shoot, you hear Rogan talking about it all the time. Yeah. Like, you know, it's definitely something that we've both talked about wanting to do and just haven't done it yet. But
yeah.
Well, and all the research that's been being done with like veterans and
Ibogaine. Oh my God, it's wild.
That's amazing. Like it's, I mean, and it looks like it's going to hopefully, it's making that pathway to hopefully being like somewhat legal.
Yeah. I think having RFK in there is
going to be helpful.
Very helpful with that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. You know, it's one of those things where it's not for everybody. Like if you got mental health issues, you probably shouldn't do this shit.
Sure.
Right. And again, I'm not a doctor. Yeah. I don't have a claim to be, but this just, the way I feel about it. But it is something that needs to be treated with respect. And when I hired the facilitator, it was a very structured process. Fill out this form. We're going to have a very detailed, matter of fact, we're going to have probably 3 or 4 conversations. And these conversations are going to be probably an hour, hour and a half before you even come here. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of things prior to this. Before you come here, follow this very specific checklist. Don't bring X, Y, and Z with you. When you're here, this thing is going to be turned off and not functional whatsoever. Be very cautious of what you consume and allow into your brain prior to this. Be very cautious about what you consume and allow into your body prior to this, including alcohol. At that point in time, I was already on the dip of getting out of alcohol. I was drinking here and there. Like I had cut it massively. And I'll also credit 75 Hard to trimming back my alcohol consumption, because I've done it a whole bunch of times at this point in my life.
It's done that for me as well. Yeah. The first time I did it was in 2020. And I mean, ever since then, I drink on occasion, you know. It's like less, honestly, probably less than 1 or 2 drinks a week at
this point. Yeah.
You know, like it's like a weekend thing. I'll, you know, if we're in here, if we've done it, or podcast, we'll have a whiskey or something, you know, like it'll be one thing, you know, it's one. Looking back into when I was in college and years after college, it was like I was just drinking to get shit faced.
Yeah.
You know, like it was,
tell you the last time I was drunk.
No, I can't really either. I mean, I can think of the last time in like the last 2 years probably that I've had more than like 4 drinks in a day.
Yeah.
You know, and that was like a bachelor party situation, you know, like, and that was it. But yeah, 75 Hard has definitely changed my life as well.
Yeah. Every time I've done 75 Hard 3 times at this point, and every time I've done it, it's I've come away with something more from it.
Have you tried reaching out to any of those guys over there at First Form? It's just right across the street.
Less than a mile from there now.
He knows who I am.
Okay.
Yeah, he definitely does. We just have so many mutual connections with people that we know. Side note here, okay? I write a blog after my first time doing 75 Hard. So I did 75 Hard. I started in May of 2020. I didn't get into this part of the story with you guys, but that was one of the pieces that dropped the hammer on me. It was like, oh shit, I got to get out of here, meaning New York, and move. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you the story of it, and then I'll get into this blog I wrote. It's the end of May of 2020. And like most of us, COVID came, shut everything down, and we just sat back and did nothing, because all of a sudden society said, you can be a lazy fat piece of shit and just hang out and do nothing. And it's cool. It's cool. So I sat home and drank 12 packs of Coronas and sleeves of Oreos until I couldn't feel good anymore. And I got like 3 weeks into it, and I was like, I can't, this is going to kill me. So now I'm thinking, I'm like, all right, well, we've got a choice here. Average people are going to continue to do this, and people who are going to advance right now and come out on the backside of COVID in a better position are going to come in now and do the work while no one else is doing the work. I know my choice.
Leapfrog the pack.
Yeah, I know my choice. So I jumped into it. And the biggest thing that I was worried about was getting rid of alcohol. Like, I can do everything else on this list. Okay, no problem. I don't know if I can kick booze for 75 days. And that was actually the easiest part of the program for me. That first round was kicking the alcohol for 75 days. So anyway, get through it, do it. I lost a whole bunch of weight. I started at 283 and I ended at 253.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, nice. I was like a string bean, dude. I look nothing like I look now. So, right after, you know, the thoughts fresh in my head, I write this long-winded blog on it. Not really that long, but I write this blog and it was just a cool story. Hey, this is my experience with this. Mm. Put it up on my website. And I don't know, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months later, I get an email. And it's like so-and-so at either ABC or NBC. I'm like, this is some spam bullshit right here. There's no way this is. So I send it to a buddy of mine. I'm like, hey, look at this. Like, is this legit? Or do you think this is, you know, some hacker trying to get my information? He's like, no, man, it looks pretty legit. So I reply to the email. And it's this chick who worked for the Doctors TV show. So she's like, would you be interested in coming on and being interviewed on your experience with your 75 hard journey? And I was like, yeah, sure. So whole formal ass process and sign these documents. And she tells me, you're going to be on with a female from New Jersey. And both of you guys are pro supporters of 75 hard. And we're also going to interview some people who aren't supporters of 75 hard.
So it's-
and we're not going to do it at the same time. So I don't even like know all that's going on until later. So, like this is going to be recorded on a Saturday. This is still COVID. So no one can fly into the studio, all done over Zoom. And, I go into my office, sit down and we're in like these Zoom waiting rooms. Dude, it was like 3 hours of just sitting there waiting for people to get their shit together. Oh, so geez. Finally they come on. I maybe got a minute and a half of airtime. Okay. Not much. And I was one of the people talking, you know, hey, this is a positive experience. This other chick, she said the same thing. They showed before and after pictures. And then the backside of the segment, they had like two clinical psychologists who just two dummies, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Some people who are going to critique working out, drinking water, reading
that's
a book.
That's too hard. You're going to hurt yourself drinking all that water.
What they learned from a book, you know?
Yeah. So that episode hit Andy's radar really hard and he went out and opened his mouth about it. So I'm sure he's aware of who I am.
Yeah, okay. For sure. I mean, I think I'm sure I've heard him talk about, I mean, he's talked about it. The people that speak negatively about 75 hard on their podcast many times. So yeah I'm sure he's probably aware. let's kind of get back into the entrepreneur side of things. If you had an entrepreneur come to you, what's the, like day one, like what's the first thing, like first process you think that they need to learn?
Number one thing that most of my clients get ripped through, whether they want to or not, when they start working with me is a time study.
Like how much time, like what they're doing.
Document every single thing you're doing for 2 weeks in 15 minute increments and you're going to hate your life. I'm just telling you right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've talked about it in my book. I've got a whole like downloadable PDF on it. And I've actually created a Google sheet that allows them to track it. Cause one of the problems I ran into was like, hey, here's the steps on how to do this. And if people came back to me like, well, where do I do it? Where do I document it? Where do I write it down? Like, I don't care. Figure it out.
Google Calendar is amazing.
Yeah. Notes on your phone or whatever.
My Google Calendar is color coded and organized to a T. Like,
So that's the part of the process. And the reason we do that is to start to train people to live and die by the calendar, right? Like, hey, if it's not on your calendar, it doesn't exist kind of deal. But in that time study, and I tell them to do it for 2 weeks, it usually takes about 3 days. 3 days in, people are like, I didn't realize I spent that much time in the toilet.
Yeah. Oh man. I spent a lot of time scrolling.
Doom scrolling.
Yeah. So we look for those gaps and we say, okay, well now you're aware. Once you're aware of, awareness brings clarity. And once you have clarity and awareness, we can say, all right, well, how do we fix this? And a lot of it comes into not just on the personal side of the house, wasting time, but you know, who's doing redundant crap in the business as a business owner. Why are you doing $10 an hour tasks? Meanwhile, you're worth $250 an hour. Mm-hmm. Right. So part of that process is them documenting and figuring out how much their WPH is, their worth per hour. Once we have that baseline established, how come you're doing $15 an hour tasks? How come you're doing $20 an hour tasks? Like that should be somebody else doing it. Well, I don't have anyone trained on it. Cool. That's where we're going to start. We're going to go build a process for that. And once we start building these processes, we can start delegating them to others or we can automate them at some point in time. And it just buys back a ton of time for this business owner where they can go focus the time on more important revenue generating activities.
Makes sense.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. I know I had an issue with this. Like when I, from where I'm at now from when I started is like handing things off. Like that was my biggest thing. Like, oh, I can just do it. I'll do it better. I can do it faster. I'll just
take me 2 seconds. Yeah. I'll just do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But those 2 seconds,
22 minutes later.
Yeah. Those 2 seconds add up and continue to add up. And now it's like, I mean, yeah, I mainly focus on the things that I want to focus on. I do. I love my team and they help so much, but yep. I think that's one of the hardest parts for most people is finding somebody to hand that shit off to.
Yeah. And part of that time study too is figuring out those things that you don't like to do. Right. Like why are you subjecting yourself? Like for me, for instance, like I'm not your bookkeeper. Never want to be, never claim to be, like, but I also understand the importance of it in business. Right. Like it has to get done. So one of the first things that I will always get off my plate when I start a new company or get involved with somebody else is like, hey, who's handling the bookkeeping? Because we need to make sure that all the data is correct. Because when we go into QuickBooks, we want to pull an accurate P&L at any point in time. Right. Like, I don't want to wait for it. All right, so let's get that delegated. Let's get the professionals in there and get that thing just taken care of.
Yeah.
I hate the accounting stuff as well.
I'm a numbers guy. I'm all right. I don't mind that side of things.
You can do all of that, buddy. can you think of a lesson that you've learned from one of your clients?
Lesson I've learned from my clients. I'll have to think on a specific one, but it happens often and I actually enjoy when it happens.
Sure. Yeah. I can imagine.
You know, everyone's got experiences. Everyone's got different experiences. People are experts in different areas of life and business. And oftentimes I'll be on a coaching call with a client and we will switch seats. And it's like, it's not planned. It's just kind of like out of blue. And it's like, oh shit. And all of a sudden the person's talking to me as if I'm the client.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I asked that is because I think I have a business coach and you know, I can think of a few instances where I've taught him something,
Yeah. I actually like that. I'm very willing and open to receive that from my clients too. And it's good. It's humbling. It keeps the conversation going good as well. And also gives mutual respect for each other. Right. Cause like, one of the problems I have with the coaching industry is a lot of the coaches put themselves on a pedestal and like, I'm fucking better than you.
Yeah.
Like, no, mm-mm. Cut that shit, dude. Like, yeah, maybe you made good money in a certain thing that you were good at, but it doesn't mean overall that you're a better human being than anybody else. So this is part of a lot of my personal growth over the last couple of years too, is being more willing and open to learn from others, even if they may not be at the same level as me, if that makes sense. And I'm not trying to say that from a derogatory standpoint. Right. Like just be willing and open to learn from somebody that you meet who may be able to give you some really good, solid insight and feedback, because you don't know whenever you're going to need that information in the near future.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because that kind of ties into the question that I was wanting to ask you. So you've built a brand and a business. How do you separate Thomas, the entrepreneur, from Thomas, the person?
I don't know if there really has to be much separation. That's kind of what I've been moving to over the last couple of years. I've been putting family first more than ever in my business the last almost 2 years at this point. Look, man, I got young kids. I know you guys do too. My oldest is 14. My youngest is going to be 7 or just, going to be 7 in 2 weeks. And two of them are going to be 7, not just one.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Twins.
Yeah. Spending time with them is of utter importance to me. It's one of the reasons that I do most of my work from home. It's one of the reasons that I block off Fridays. Friday's a non-work day. Friday's, we'll call it an admin / just in case day. Yeah. Right? So I don't allow anyone
to call those day less days.
Yeah. So if I have to work on a Friday, damn right I will. Right. Because sometimes we have overflow and we got projects and things need to happen. You make a commitment to somebody. But Friday, for the most part, is blocked off. And like, if you go into any, if I send you guys one of my calendar links, right, you're never going to see Friday open ever. Okay, but if you had a situation that popped up and you called me, I probably got time for you on Friday, kind of deal. Clients who are listening to this, do not overstep your bounds. but that right there is just the utter importance of me wanting to be fully present for the family as much as possible.
That's awesome. I've definitely over the last year, it's something I've been doing as well. You know, and I was talking to my wife about this recently, and. You know, my oldest is about to be 3. My youngest is 8 months now. And, you know, my oldest is such a mama's boy, you know, and I was telling her the other day, I was like, I feel like I'm connecting so much more with our youngest than I was with my oldest. And she's like, well, you're around a lot more. Mm. Oh, right. I am. You know, like I kind of made a switch over like the last year, really honestly, ever since we started kind of doing this podcast and like, you know, and, you know, kind of having to live the things that I'm talking about on here and, you know, holding me accountable and making sure that I'm, you know, going to be the best dad possible. And, yeah, I've been, I've kind of made that switch as well.
That's awesome.
Well, yeah. And then I guess probably hearing from Isaac, because I don't have my boys all the time. So I have them every couple of days. So it's, you know, when I don't have them, I'm going to work my ass off and I'm going to get a lot of work in. But those days that I have them or that I got to pick them up from school, they got to be picked up by four.
Yep.
So I'm picking them up at four, and then my youngest from preschool by 4:15, 4:30. Mm-hmm. And then my phone's down.
Yeah.
That time's being spent with them. And, you know, and that's for me. And then I have them every other weekend. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'll tell people like, hey, I'm available on the weekends, but it's going to be around that schedule with the kids if I absolutely need to. But you don't see a whole lot of that anymore in this industry. There used to be a ton of it, but not so much anymore. But yeah, I mean, that's been the biggest thing for me. That's with this divorce, is realizing the importance of time. You know, and mm-hmm. I mean, I've always been pretty good with keeping my like time blocking, but time with people, time with kids, time with the building that relationship. Cause my kids are the same. They're mama's boys.
Yep.
And you know, that's fine. They're 5 and 6 years old. Eventually there's going to be a shift in that, but I want to make sure that when that shift happens, that I'm doing the things now that they can ease into that shift and feel comfortable going from being a mama's boy to a, you know, dad's boy.
Yeah.
So
one thing I want to touch on, cause I know you got a question you're about to hit me with. I was very fortunate in my service-based company that my ex-business partner was 10 years my senior, and he had kids who were older than my kids. I got to see what the future 10 years of my life looked like before I had to live it. And that's one of the reasons that I got out of the business with him. I was like, man, like, you know, we make good money, and like, this dude's on the road nonstop. Like, he hasn't seen his kids grow up for the most part. Yes, he spends some weekends and some time with them. Don't get me wrong, he does. He's a good dad. I'll never take that away from him. He's also one of the hardest working dudes I've ever met in my life. But he missed a lot of life with his kids and his wife because of the business. And still to this day, he still owns and operates the company. I'm sure nothing changed, because that's just his mentality. So I got to see this glimpse of what my life would have looked like if I had continued down that road. And I said, not for me.
See, and I wish I would have taken that same approach, because my business partner is the same way. He's, you know, he's 20 years older than I am. And just the way he's, you know, worked and all that, being away from his family, I was like, I should have learned that lesson. But when I got in, I didn't have kids and I was go, 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 go. I want to be the best at this. That's just always been my mentality. And I just never made that shift once the kids were born that I did. I mean, kids always came first, but I would put business in front of them. And even though I'm sitting here saying that they come first, but there was times where business took priority and I would put business first. And that was a downfall that I had to learn. And ever since then, it's like, nope, kids are most important.
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of leads into what I was going to ask you is, you know, you mentioned the shift in your life came when you found out your wife was pregnant with, or your ex-wife was pregnant with your first. How does fatherhood shape the way you approach leadership and business? There's
so many crossovers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like setting expectations, for instance. You know, if you don't set proper expectations for your kids and the way you want something done, right? Like, hey, Monday night, we take garbage out to the front of the house kind of deal. And this is how it's done. This is where the cans get placed. Don't forget. And we have one of those garbage trucks that comes by and just picks up with a claw. Yeah. So the cans have to face a certain direction. If I hadn't given the kids specific instructions on how to go and do that process, like, it would be done wrong every time. Mm-hmm. Right. And of course it was done wrong the first two or three times and you have to correct. The same thing applies to your employees. You can't just hire someone and be like, hey, sit over my shoulder here for 3 weeks and watch everything I do. Mm-hmm. And after 3 weeks, I'm going to expect you to do everything as well as I do. And I've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah.
You're out of your mind.
Yeah. Right?
It doesn't work that way. Right. And that dude retained 1/100th of all the things you threw at him over the last 3 weeks. So that's where processes come into place when it comes to business and whatnot. But there's so many similarities there. Like the kids, like, I don't have formal written processes and stuff for the kids at home, but there is some structure, right? Hey, you're responsible for this tonight. You're responsible for this. You're responsible for this. And the next night you guys are going to trade places. So all of you understand how to do all of these things. I see some crossover there too. I think that's important in the business world as well. It's like, you know, hey, we only have one person in house who specializes in this thing. And if that person's out sick or calls in sick or decides one day, hey, I quit, or unfortunately gets run over by a bus, like, who's going to handle that? So the other team members have to have some understanding of
what everybody else is doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Well, and that kind of leads into, so like, being a stepdad, how does your role with your girlfriend's kids, do you parent them, or how does that work for you with them? Are you as hands-on, or are you a little bit more standoffish because they may not be your kids, or have you talked to their father about how they want to parent and how things like that?
Their dad's not really that involved, unfortunately. Okay. I try to parent them just the same I do my own kids. Okay. There have been a couple of situations that pop up where I'm like, hey, before I open my mouth, I'm going to have a conversation with you, my woman, before we have the conversation with the kids kind of deal. And vice versa as well. Like, you know, it's a unique situation. Like, hey, seven kids is a lot of damn kids in one house.
Brady Bunch, man.
Yeah. We have just had water family.
Yeah.
we have four girls in the house 24/7. They're with us all the time. Okay. Their dad lives out of state. He sees them maybe once a year. Right. So we have four kids full time at any given time. Like, that's a lot of kids in a normal household.
Right.
Right. And then you had, you know, my three in there, and it's like, whoa, Christmas.
Yeah. You guys drive a bus around?
Buy one of those. We got sprinters.
So I'm all for it. And I've been trying to get that going now for a year and a half. And she is a hard pass.
Okay.
Hard pass. Yeah. So us road trips and traveling, it's two vehicles.
Okay.
We had a house in Utah up until July of this year. And we kind of split time between Dallas and Utah, just out of Salt Lake City. And we made two trips with the kids there and back.
That's a long drive, right?
Yeah, it's like it's 18 hours or so with no stops. So realistically, it's more like 20, 21. But you're stopping at least once and staying overnight.
Yeah.
Really cool experience with them. But just a lot of kids, a lot of cars, a lot of snacks, a lot of mess in the car.
Sure, of course. Man, well, if you had to completely start over tomorrow, no money, no connections, just your experience, how would you do it? How would you rebuild?
It's a great question. How would I rebuild? You know, I'd probably take a little bit more of the traditional approach than what people are doing now in the digital sense. That makes sense.
Elaborate.
A lot of people want to come out and do this right here. Excuse me. They want a podcast. They want to use social media. They want to go post and say, come buy my shit. And cool. Those things work. It's one of the ways I get business now.
Sure.
But I think there is a missing element that has kind of dissipated over time as the rise of digital marketing has grown. Like, digital marketing used to be one of those things where, like, you had to be a big corporation to do it and do it well. And now, I mean, I'm wearing a high level shirt here, guys, if you haven't noticed. Like, I run high level in my own company, and I help my clients implement a lot of high level solutions. And yes, it's great. It's a fantastic tool. I wouldn't use any of the platform right now. But at the same point in time, we're missing a lot of the human touch. Like, this company is coming out now with AI bots that call people for you. Cool. I'll nerd out in that shit all day with the best of them. But there's something missing with with someone like on your team just picking up the phone and calling somebody. Right. A lead comes over and you actually picked up the phone and called them rather than send them an automated SMS. So I think there's got to be more of a human touch, human element that comes to it. You know, go knock some doors, go see some people face to face, sit down like this, break some bread with people, have some real conversations, because it's in the human connection that we actually make the connections that make business work.
Yeah.
That's,
I totally agree on our side of the business for sure. I mean, if you look at how many people get phone calls from, you know, some call farm in wherever, you know, hey, I want to buy your house kind of thing. It just, most people hang up immediately.
Yep.
And people, at least in our industry, people want to work with people they're friends with. I mean, that's kind of how I look at my business, make a friend, make a sale. And, you know, I think that's a huge piece of, I mean, you can apply that to any business.
Yeah.
Right.
You sure can. Kinda.
Absolutely. If you had to give a no BS breakdown of what separates successful entrepreneurs from those who fail, what would it be?
Tenacity, never giving up, small steps forward daily.
Yeah.
Kind of the stuff we talked about before. Mm. Not every day is going to be sunshine and rainbows and unicorn farts. Just not. Mm. The days, and this is where I think lessons from the gym and fitness come in big time. The days when you show up when you don't want to are often the best days where you perform the best in the gym that day.
Damn right. Yes.
Right? Like, I've had some of my best PRs lifting wise on the days where I felt like dog crap and had a stiff back when I woke up. And I was like, oh, I don't want to go to the gym. And then you get there and you move some monster weight.
Yeah. I mean, literally it happened to me last night. I had this, you know, when I walked in here today, I was on the phone with trying to solve this deal that's supposed to close today. And I was just irritated. I was like, I'm just going to go to the gym 8:30 at night. Not ideal. Didn't make it here earlier today because I was, you know, but I got to get it in. Got to check that box. You know, ended up hitting a, 15-pound PR on strict press last night. Mm-hmm. Sweet, you know, but I was just fucking irritated and pissed. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go in there and just give it hell. And it's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Staying on the fitness side of things. You've been on TRT and peptide therapy.
Yeah.
How has that changed your performance, your mentality, your physicality, everything?
Yeah, dude, everything. Mindset. Yeah. So I've been on TRT 5 years.
Okay. So you got on it right before it really became a thing.
Yeah. I had a buddy of mine who's a doctor, and he specializes in, he's a real doctor, an MD, specializes in wellness and like, you know, longevity and making you look good too. And I had been working out for quite some time and talked to him about it. And he's like, yeah, man, he goes, let's run your blood. Let's run your labs and see where you are. Dude, my test came back. It was like 232. This is 5 years ago. He's like, it's way too low for you. And he gave me the equation. He's a car guy too. And me, you know, growing up in the automotive industry, he's like, I'm going to put it to you this way. He goes, you, sir, you're a high performer. Right, you're an entrepreneur, you're a business owner, you're a leader, like you move nonstop, and you get a whole bunch of kids. Okay, and this is even before the seven. This is three, still a whole bunch of kids.
Right,
he's like, you are the Ferrari who's been putting 87 octane into your gas tank. He goes, we got to get you on that high octane fuel because you will just perform better in every area of your life. I was like, all right, well, let's give it a whirl.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. So I started in 2020. Just as COVID hit, and made a world of difference. Mindset got better. Obviously the physical fitness got better. Got strong as shit. It was one of those things that really helped with the transition. Cause I told you guys, I worked out heavy for the first 3 years and didn't see any difference in the physical aspect. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until TRT was introduced that I started to see physical changes.
Yeah. Same for me. Yeah. We both started last year. We had a guy on the show who owns a health and wellness clinic, mm-hmm. and they've got nurse practitioners on staff. And I had been trying at that point for about 8 months to get all my shit figured out through my primary care physician.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. It was a pain in the ass.
Yep.
Went in January, tested. He's like, wow, that's really low. I was at 190.
Oh yeah.
And came back. He's like, let's test you in 3 months and see how, you know, you got in with a nutritionist, you're working out and all this stuff. Let's see.
Get your natural levels up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went back and tested again in April and was at 220.
Okay.
So I went up a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, let's get into an endocrine doctor. I couldn't get in until October. Yeah. That's the earliest they had available. And so we had Rocky come on and what was that? late August, early September. Yeah. And he came on and like, we were in the very next day getting blood work and then a week later started on it.
Yep.
Yeah.
That simple.
Yeah. And it was great. Yeah. That first shot. I don't know about you. I know most people, it takes a while for them to fill it, but like, I felt like the dude taking Limitless, taking that pill for the first time. It's like, holy shit, this is what I'm supposed to feel like.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah. Mine was a slow transition.
Yeah. Mine was as well.
Yeah, I actually started with pellets first, okay. Which I don't know. I probably wouldn't do that again. I take injections now, but the pellets, and this was kind of a pain point that I ran into because I took the pellets in like February 2020, the first time. It's supposed to last 6 months, and they go by weight and your body size. Like, I don't know if people understand the process of having the pellets put in.
It's like a pill that they like shoot into you, right?
They send the doctor a kit, okay. It's all hermetically sealed. They pull this thing off. They bring you in. It's like an in-office procedure. They stick you in the butt with numbing, whatever it is, right?
Novocaine.
They let it go for a couple minutes. They check to make sure that you're numb. They pull out a scalpel. They cut your ass cheek open. And they've got this plastic tool that's spring-loaded. And it's got like a point on it. And they load it with the pellets. And the pellets look like grains of rice. And they insert this thing into the incision. They put it in a star pattern under the muscle, or actually into the fat muscle-ish area. When they're done, they basically put a small suture over it, like a butterfly. And they tell you, don't do lower body for at least a week. because you have the possibility of whacking that thing right open. Homeboy got done with this thing, and I'm like, man, you know, it's swollen and whatnot. I reach back, I feel my right butt cheek, and I'm like, dude, there's it. Take a golf ball, cut that sucker in half, and now stick it under your butt cheek. That's what it was.
Really?
I was like, yo, this is wild. So it's supposed to last 6 months. COVID is this thing. I'm in New York now. The doctor's in Dallas. Like, how am I going to get back there and like do all these things? Luckily, I was able to. But my dose did not last the 6 months like it was supposed to. So I had, you know, good steady amount, and then dipped down.
That's what I heard about the pellets. They you peak at the beginning, and then yeah, it's like a slow dissipation.
You do. Yeah. So I did, I think, three treatments with the pellets. And then after that, I was like, hey, I'm done with this. I don't like coming back in and literally getting sliced open every, and it's not even 6 months. It's now it's like every 4 months. Mm-hmm. There's gotta be a better way. He's like, yeah, just switch you to injections. And I've been on them since. And, been super good.
Yeah.
I stopped pinning my butt though. A couple reasons. I've gotten less flexible as I've grown in size. I tore my bicep tendon in my left arm a year ago, and I don't have the mobility with this arm to get back there the proper way. So I've been pinning my delts.
I've heard that's a Murph
dose. Yeah, and honestly, it's way better for me. I've tried my quads. Huh. I've tried my butt.
My butt still gets sore.
Yeah,
I haven't had any issues.
I mean, it's weird because sometimes I'll do the injection and it doesn't like the next day I don't even feel anything, and then there's other days it feels like I just got kind of hurts. I'm spot, like, fuck,
like, what like, is that?
And I like know now when I do the injection, oh, that one's gonna hurt tomorrow.
Yep.
You know, like, yep. Ooh, I can feel that one's gonna suck. I hit a bad spot or whatever. You know, I still haven't mastered it. Figured out.
I haven't had any issues with it.
Really?
Yeah, I've been lucky.
You're the anomaly, sir.
Yeah. I guess.
Yeah, the anomaly who felt it immediately.
Right,
you don't
right.
feel the needle jealous. The next day. Yeah. I'm jealous for sure. Yeah man. Well, what's the craziest challenge you faced in business that nobody would believe?
Ooh.
It's just a crazy thing that happened.
Crazy thing that happened. I'll give you two. Okay, they go back to the GPS tracking industry. Number one, I'm going to call a big company out right here, and I've already done this publicly, and I don't give a rat's ass if they hear this because I have zero love for them whatsoever. So you guys have heard of Verizon, I'm sure.
Of course.
Okay. Verizon owns a whole bunch of companies. They're all like subsidiaries of Verizon. There was one called Verizon Connect. Verizon Connect is a GPS tracking telematics company. Okay. The reason that Verizon and AT&T like to get involved in the GPS tracking space is every single GPS tracking device that's out there has a SIM card or basically a phone number in it. And the way that they send the GPS tracking data is over a coded text message back and forth. It's over cellular, right? So it communicates with satellites and then sends this data packet. So these big phone companies love tracking devices because it's the same to them as selling a cell phone. They get paid the same money for the SIM card kind of deal. Anyway, Verizon Connect comes in with all their giant funds, and they gobble up like three smaller GPS tracking companies. And we did work for two of the three of them. So all of a sudden now we're working for Verizon Connect. And the companies we worked for prior were awesome to deal with. Verizon Connect comes in, and now they're technically a software company. That's what GPS tracking companies are. They buy this black boxes hardware from overseas. They program it to work with the software solution that they create. Don't mind me. I'm just breaking shit here. So they come in and they tell all the vendors, hey, guys, we're going to continue sending work to you. And they're busy, by the way. Like, we're doing multiple jobs a day for these people. We're super busy with them. We're going to continue sending you a lot of work, but we're updating the software we use in the background that actually pays you guys, and you're not going to get paid from us for at least 90 days. Hmm. Okay. Well, that sucks.
Well, yeah.
You gave us heads up and notice. Mm-hmm. Cool. So we're dealing with it. Long story short, 90 days turned into like 6 months. And my guys got paid every week. Like, think about it. You got an employee.
Right.
Yeah. These guys get paid every week. So now I'm literally playing the bank, and I'm a small business. Okay. We're doing a couple million bucks a year. Cool. I've got 30 people on the team. Cool. But I don't have the bankroll that Verizon does. And they put this massive pressure on me, my business partner, my company at the time. And I got real spicy with them very publicly online. Courtesy of the tracking group that I had, and just I was calling them out in their Facebook ads. Like, I just didn't give a shit. Like, you guys owe us money. They owed us over $200,000.
Oh wow!
You take that kind of cash flow away from a business, a small business that needs it. Like, you can bury them really quickly, and it put us into such a predicament that On three separate occasions, I went to my personal savings account and withdrew money to cover payroll. Like, what?
Right.
It shouldn't be this way. Like, we're performing the work for you guys.
Right.
We showed up.
We did the work. Our end of the bargain. Yeah.
So, they eventually did pay and they caught everything up on that. But I had gotten so vocal with them that they decided to blacklist Top Class Installations, and they're no longer a vendor for Verizon Connect. And cool. Yeah. Yeah. That was a dicey one. Another one. Oh, what's another one that we dealt with? This is a tough business situation. What was the question again?
It was just,
craziest,
crazy thing that happened in business.
Could be speaking engagements. It could be
nothing dicey with speaking engagements. I've been very fortunate. Like I probably shouldn't say this. Okay. I had a speaking engagement that went sideways. Actually, it turned out well, but it was wild. So it's August 2022. I get invited to go to Utah to speak at this event. And I don't know, there's 150, 200 people at this event. Walk in the room, meet the dude. Cool. Everything's ready to rock and roll. Check the place out. You know, I see it's busy and like, hey man, I'm going to, I just got done with the gym. It's like eight in the morning. This thing opened up and I was like, hey man, I'm going to go upstairs and shower and get ready for the day. And I'll come back down. Like what time do you need me on today? He's like, 12:30, something like that. All right, cool. Got plenty of time. So I go upstairs, shower up, and I'm in the shower and all of a sudden the lights go out. What's going on? It's August in Utah. Like what are the lights going out? It's the middle of the day. So, wind up going downstairs. The entire hotel is out. The entire block is out.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh man, like as someone who's hosted a lot of events in over my career for myself and for others, like I understand the pressure this guy's under. He's got a room full of people that paid a couple hundred, if not thousands of dollars to be here. And he's got no lights. He's got no AV. He's got no microphones, nothing. And his show's still going on. So I'm like, man, I hope this stuff's on by the time I'm done. And like, I usually come in pretty prepared. Right. So some places you go in and there is no presentation. So it's you speaking. And other times it's, hey, I've got a presentation with this one because some of these slides are going to be important for what I got to tell you. And like, you know, for anyone who's done any kind of public speaking, like you're putting some work into it before you show up at the venue. Even if it's the same speech you've given before, you kind of got to manipulate it and change it to
the crowd.
To the crowd. Yeah. So I had put hours of work into this sucker. I'm like, oh man, get into the room and everything's still out. Everything was still out the entire day. Everything was still out into the next day for day two of the event, right? This place was wiped. So I went up, getting on stage at like 12:30, 1 o'clock and spoke for, I think 45 minutes, 50 minutes.
Have like,
just had lights? To raise my voice. There was one floodlight on in the place. Like, dude, honestly, him and his team handled it so well. The people who were attendees, they handled it like, it's just life, man. Yeah. Like there's certain things that are outside the control. It's not like someone went in there and said, oh, we're going to turn the lights on you guys so you have a miserable experience.
Did anybody die? That's what I was asked.
Bingo. So almost.
Oh.
We found out that the reason that the block, not just the hotel, the block had no lights, a lady crashed a car in the underground parking garage and took out a transformer that morning.
Wow.
Yeah, she survived. She was okay. But it wiped. I mean, so this was a giant hotel. Right across the street from the convention center in Salt Lake City. And next to this hotel was a huge ass mall as well. Wiped out the power for both of these facilities. Wow. Yeah. So think about all the business the mall lost that day.
Right.
Wow, that's crazy. Man,
that is crazy. What about clients? Any crazy client stories or transformations that you've seen with your clients?
Dude, I got a recent one right now. I'm so proud of these people. Nick and Jessica Beckman, right?
What's their company?
They own High Volume Car Stereo in Lawton, Oklahoma. Okay. Right? A little small podunk town. There's a military base in the town. Like it's like old school hometown, right? I met Nick at the very first speaking engagement I had in 2019.
Okay.
Yep. We were both hanging out at the hotel pool like the day after my speaking engagement. He saw me speak and we were at the hotel pool and we were having a couple of drinks and he had just lost his mom and like just having genuine conversation with the guy, you know, and I'm like, man, this fucking guy talks a lot, you know, cool, whatever. And then every time that I went to, and I spoke at one of these Knowledge Fest events for the MEA that was close to where he was from, like he would always show up and sit in the front row and ask really good questions. All right, cool. So, this past September, we do the one in Dallas. He's sitting in the front row with his wife. And afterwards he comes up to me and he's like, I'm ready. There's enough of this crap. We've talked about this a bunch of times. He goes, I want to work with you. And he goes, I'm only going to do it if my wife can come along. And if your girl, Catherine, is going to come and help too. And like, cool. Cause that's what Catherine does too. She does a lot of mindset, a lot of business coaching as well. And her and, his wife, Jessica, clicked like immediately. It's like, all right, cool. Now let's put something together and make this happen. So they invest a whole bunch of money. Come work with us. And we started September. We just extended the contract for another 3 months, about 2 weeks ago. And the growth that they've seen and the things that they've done since starting with us is just, it's leaps and bounds. So they both have a lot of growth on the business side of the house, which I'll get into in a second, but also on the personal side of the house. Like, that's one of the things people don't realize too. I'll never go out there and be like, hey, I'm your life coach. Like, I don't like the term. It's not how I roll. But when I'm helping someone in their business, oftentimes we have to get into the life side of things, the personal side of things, because oftentimes you got a problem over there that's holding you back from succeeding over here, or you have to go develop over here in yourself and your person a bit more if you want to see that success flow to the business. So we're doing all these cool things. We go up, we see him in person, which I usually only reserve that for clients who are paying me to do an on-site assessment with them. They were close. Like, you know what? I'm going to bum up to their place and see their facility. We go there, we check it out. While we were there, we started running over some of the numbers with them. And in the first hour, we found $55,000 of cash that they hadn't collected over the prior year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was as simple as them raising their labor rate by 10%. Like, Nick, when's the last time you raised your labor rate? He goes, the year before COVID. Okay. Well, we need to make some changes. So before we left that day, went into his software and changed all the pricing, not on the parts, just on labor. And he's already brought in an additional $55,000 from that alone. So that, awesome. That more than paid for the investment, working with me and Catherine. And while we're there, we looked at the facility. I said, you know, the place needs some refreshing, right? I don't know if you guys feel this. We find this in our homes. We find this in our businesses. We find this in our cars. We kind of put the blinders on and get used to whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right. And it takes that unemotionally attached third party perspective sometimes to go, hey, that looks like shit right there. You should clean it up. Mm-hmm. And not from a nasty perspective, but someone who's caring for you in the best of ways. So, not that his place was in bad shape whatsoever, but there was a couple of things that can get cleaned up. Hey, do this. And a lot of clients that I've worked with in the past will say, yeah, cool. And they're like, yeah, forget it. Right. So not only has Nick made the investment to work with us, but now he's making an investment, had this parking lot repaved, at the front of his store repainted, had new signage for the windows put together. Now the place
looks like
a whole new place. He's getting a ton more drive-by traffic and people stopping in. So his walk-in traffic has just gone through the roof, right? We've built systems and processes to basically handle the increased workload. Next to him, Nick, keep this in mind, he owns the building. Mm-hmm. He's got a retail store, his office, his stock room, like his parts, and he's got the garage is two bays. They can fit two cars in there to work on and close the doors for weather. Behind the shop is a big ass parking lot where he can do work as long as it's nice outside. Behind that is an open lot that he owns as well. And he planned on building a new facility there. He doesn't have the $850,000 right now to invest into it. Cool. Well, something else would be nice if it popped up and he'd be interested in considering it, right? So we kind of put these thoughts out into the universe. Calls us up 2 months ago. He says, hey, because the lady next door, the little old Korean lady who owns the Butterfly Lounge, which is a bar, she just knocked on my door and said, asked me if I'd be interested in buying the place from her. I'm like, well, what does she want for it? And she's like, he goes to me, she wants $80,000 for it. What? He's like, yeah, he goes, I don't know if I believe her or not.
Right.
Like, well, all right, cool. Like, whether you believe her or not, we're going to
drop a contract.
So, you know, he's been in his company. He's owned it for 10 years, but they've been in business for 30.
Okay.
And he worked in it for 15 years prior to owning it because his uncle owned it and he worked for his uncle. I mean, he's been there a long time. Mm. Got a really good relationship with local bankers, calls up the bank, and the bank is like, hey, you're good. We know the property. We'll basically cut you the check for it. Like it's a done deal. Just formalize it a little bit. So, he goes in, a couple of weeks pass by, does so. I'm going to pull up a photo here. I know the camera can't see it, but you guys sure can.
If you want to text it to us, we can put it on.
Yeah, I definitely will. They're in full blown construction mode inside the new facility right now.
Nice. That's awesome. Walls up. Sweet.
Yep. Very cool.
Yeah. So this is going to be a fabrication room for them. I'll send you these photos as well. They do a lot of high end fabrication and building of, you know, just cool panels and shit and cars. So they got a fab room there. They're getting into, now they're doing window tint and truck accessories. So this whole shop over there is going to be for their high end fabrication and window tinting. So like the window tinting, the projections we did on window tinting alone is going to bring in an additional $224,000 into the company in gross sales this year.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Awesome.
Very cool.
So cool. Man.
Yep.
Very cool. Well, that's awesome. And we really appreciate you coming on and making time for us. And, you know, Jamie was like, make sure you have them done by this time. And I'm like, well, fuck no, I don't want to cut this short. I want to keep rolling. But I'm like, I know we need to pass you on. You got a busy day today.
Yeah.
So we thank you for coming on. Is there anything you want to pitch or throw out there before we let you go?
I'm not the pitchy kind of guy. Okay. If people like what they heard from me and they want to know more about what I do, just come check me out. The best place to find me is go to connectwiththomas.com. It's a little landing page that has links to all my social media, all my websites and all that kind of crap.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we like to hit you with one last surprise question that wasn't on the questionnaire. It's called the Tombstone Game.
Yep.
Here lies Thomas. What's it say on your tombstone?
I think the most important part is father. Father, leader, helper of others.
Perfect.
Beautiful.
It's awesome.
Thank you so much for coming on. And thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. If you haven't clicked that subscribe button yet for us, please do that. Do so. That would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.